Hello and welcome to the Full of Beans podcast, hosted by myself, Hannah Hickenbotham. Throughout these podcast episodes, we will speak to a range of individuals about their experience of eating disorders, with the aim of increasing awareness and understanding whilst reducing stigma and isolation. Please note that the topics discussed in this podcast may be triggering for some individuals, so tread lightly, check in with yourself, and reflect on these conversations. In this week's episode, I'm joined by Dr. Kai Thomas, a researcher at Cardiff University leading the Leading Study, a groundbreaking project exploring the lived experiences of neurodivergent and gender diverse people with eating disorders. Kai's work focuses on improving awareness, understanding, and support for eating disorders in autistic, ADHD, and gender diverse communities. As parts of their fellowship, they collaborate with people with lived experience, clinicians, academics, and support organisations to uncover the unique factors contributing to eating disorders in these groups and the barriers they face in accessing care. Today is Trans Day of Visibility, so this week we're talking to Kai about their personal experience of being trans and having an eating disorder and how that's led them to be interested in researching this topic and the important things that we need to research in order to support these communities. I really hope you enjoy this episode and thank you so much for listening.
Well, thank you so much for joining me, Kai. It's so lovely to have you on the podcast.
Thank you for inviting me. No, it's great to be here.
Yeah. Well, it was awesome because I'd been thinking about the Trans Day of Visibility, and I was thinking, oh, you know, what could I do on the podcast? Because I think it's a really important thing that I wanted to reflect on, but don't have experience myself. And then your email came through, and I was like, perfect. This is amazing. We can do a podcast together, and we can have a chat about being trans, and then also the research that you're doing.
It was really nice for me as well because I talk about eating disorders a lot. Like I'm obviously constantly reading about eating disorders as part of my research, but actually reflecting on some of my own personal experiences is not something I do very often. Mm-hmm. So it's actually a really nice opportunity to discuss it in more detail.
Amazing. I'm really pleased to hear that. Do you want to introduce yourself for the listeners?
Yeah, so I'm Kai Thomas. I'm a researcher at the School of Psychology in Cardiff University. I'm currently a postdoctoral researcher, which means I'm basically leading a project which is focused on eating disorders in gender diverse and neurodivergent people, so specifically autistic people and people with ADHD.
Nice, amazing. That's very cool research that you're doing. So, yeah, it's a pleasure to have you. Do you want to start by telling us a little bit maybe about your personal experience, and then we could maybe talk about how that led into your research?
Yeah. So, yeah, my personal experience is that I have my own lived experience. I'm trans, and I also had an eating disorder, and so I've had anorexia in early adolescence. So it was actually that I had an eating disorder before I then explored my gender identity and realised that I was trans. It all probably started when my twin sister had anorexia. So we're identical twins. She had anorexia. And I think it was obviously really difficult seeing her go through that. And sort of being on the side of seeing how devastating an eating disorder can be, and how challenging it is to support someone through that, and watch, you know, the impact that it has on the whole family. So she had anorexia around sort of age 11 to 12, and then as she was sort of recovering, I always felt uncomfortable with my body, and it wasn't necessarily that I'd seen her go through it and thought, that's what I'm going to do. It was just that in terms of the actual eating disorder developing, I thought it was related to my trans identity. It was just not something that I'd really thought of or knew about. I didn't know anyone who was trans. To be honest, I didn't know what that meant or that it was a possibility. I just knew that. But I suppose unless people talk about it, you just don't you don't really know that what you're feeling is sort of different to everyone else. Like, I just felt like uncomfortable, and looking back now, I found it quite difficult to form relationships with people and connections. Maybe because I felt so different and I struggled to find people who related to me.
What you've explained there is actually really interesting, because when you mentioned about your twin sister, my mind immediately went to, oh, genetic link, eating disorders, like, could there potentially be that? And then obviously you spoke about the fact that maybe, you know, you didn't even realize that you were trans, you just felt uncomfortable in your body. And I think it was in, like, your experience is a really good way of explaining that eating disorders don't have one singular cause, because people could say, like, oh, well, you developed an eating disorder because either, you know, the environment that you're in at home, you and your twin sister both had it, or, you know, because of that genetic element, or because you felt uncomfortable in your body. And actually it's an amalgamation of all of these things that then predispose somebody to having an eating disorder. And then, you know, and I think that was something I'm so passionate about talking about when we talk about topics about things like, you know, the connection between things like being trans and an eating disorder. I'm so conscious to not say, like, just because someone's trans, if they've had an eating disorder, it's because they're trans, because there could be so many other things, and the fact that they're trans might not have even contributed to that. But
I think that's such a good point, and I suppose something that I didn't draw any connections between my eating disorder and my gender when I was actually, you know, when I was really unwell and when I was receiving treatment. It just never came up. And I suppose, although I had that, like, sort of struggle with my identity, part of that, I always wonder if it's part of being a twin. And always sort of, you know, when we were growing up, always being seen as like one person, and a lot of comparisons. So a lot of people comparing, you know, it is really difficult, because trying to find your own sense of identity as a twin, you know, because we're still really close now, and we still enjoy a lot of the same things, but we are two separate people. And exploring my gender identity and, you know, going through a transition is something that ultimately you do alone, because, you know, you have to make that decision about whether it's something that is right for you or not. They were, like, my family were incredibly supportive, and I think having that support was, yeah, something I was really privileged to have, because not a lot of people have that.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm really interested in terms of, I guess, maybe like looking at your timeline a bit, in terms of, you said when you were going through the eating disorder, like, it wasn't even something you considered in terms of being trans. When did you start to think about that? And was there any kind of crossover with the eating disorder, or is it kind of like you recovered and then started to think maybe more about your identity?
It's a really good question. I think it's something that I've thought a lot about it, being the sort of researcher that I am, trying to understand what's going on. But I suppose in terms of my gender identity, I probably started really exploring it as I was sort of going through eating disorder treatment and recovery. I suppose, like many people, I can't really remember a lot of the time when I was really unwell. It's sort of like a blur. I can only really remember, like, you know, as I was starting to come out of that, which was the intense phase of it, and really starting to think about, what do I want from my life, and, you know, what do I need to, like, help me recover and be in a good place. It was sort of accident, really, because I do remember it quite vividly. I was watching a documentary with my twin sister, was called The Boy Who Was Born a Girl. It was the first time I'd ever heard anyone talk about being trans. And I remember watching it thinking, that really sounds like how I feel. I suppose I didn't really take it in, but that was probably the first time that I'd really related to something that someone was saying. And that was like the kickstart, really, to exploring it in more detail. I didn't know anyone who was trans. It was pretty tough looking back on it. But I think it came to a point, and I suppose it's sort of similar to the point that you can get in terms of an eating disorder and sort of making sort of first step into recovery, is that I knew there was something I needed to do. I knew it was going to be difficult, you know. I suppose I just had to put that to one side, really, because ultimately it was something that I either did or I was never going to be able to live the life that I wanted to live. And it sort of came down to that, really.
Yeah. I think it's really interesting, and I don't really have any other kind of way of comparing to this other than when I've been diagnosed with neurodiversity. So I'm not saying that they're the same thing, but it's kind of, I feel like, a similar pattern in my brain, in that what you were just saying there of like, I didn't really think of it, because ultimately what you were feeling was your norm, so why would you question it? And then actually hearing someone else say maybe how you're feeling and explain it in a like an articulated way, because they've had time to process it, you're like, that's what it is. And that's how I felt when I got diagnosed with ADHD, was like, oh, that's not how everyone else experiences. Oh, there's some people that experience it, but actually, you know, what I'm experiencing is not quote unquote the norm, let's say. And I also was just thinking there as well, in terms of, because I think a lot of the time when people talk about like gender and sexuality and things like that, they often talk about the fact that that's almost like a trigger that could cause an eating disorder. But I know in my own recovery, something that I've found is, as I've recovered, particularly like this time around, I've really dug deeper to learn a lot about myself. And I do think that the neurodivergence diagnosis has helped with that. But one thing I've kind of started to think about is my sexuality, and maybe explore that a bit more than I ever was able to. And I think it's almost recovering from the eating disorder, because of the self-awareness and most of the maturity, and personally I felt like I was going through puberty, almost that then kind of triggered me thinking about my sexuality. And I wonder if that's maybe something you experienced, rather than it being a trigger for the eating disorder, almost recovery being a trigger for like having a way of connecting deeper with yourself to realize things.
That's a really good way of thinking about it, because I suppose before the eating disorder, I suppose bearing in mind that I, you know, the eating disorder developed in early adolescence, where obviously you are still trying to understand yourself and all that stuff. But I suppose I probably thought about my identity and sense of self and how, you know, I related to people and how they related to me a lot more during that process. So I had family therapy, individual therapy as part of the treatment. So that in itself, you know, you do have to explore, explore your identity in some way or another. So I think you're right in that it was a bit of a kickstart into me starting to think about my identity in more detail, which I wouldn't have done probably before, or it would have been sort of a realization that came a lot later in life.
And in a strange way, that's something I've been really grateful. I was actually talking to my friend about this on Tuesday, which I think is why it feels quite present for me. But we were talking about how, despite an eating disorder being absolutely horrific and you wouldn't wish it on anybody, it does, recovery gives you that space to really have to like dig deeper and think about yourself, and you know, it gives you those skills, I guess, to have that self-awareness and explore things. So in a strange way, you know, there are positives, because maybe people that haven't experienced an eating disorder wouldn't need to do that. But I was really interested. So thank you so much for sharing your personal experience. I think that, you know, I think that will be, a lot of people will resonate with that and find that really interesting to listen to. I also wanted to ask you about the research that you're doing. So I know that you are doing a study called the Leading Study, and I wondered if you wanted to let us know what that's about.
Yeah, so the Leading Study, which is not the most inventive acronym that we could come up with. We tried many acronyms.
I love it when studies have acronyms, because it's always like, when I worked in research, there was literally a woman within the office that her like title or whatever it was, like you went to her because you wanted an acronym for your study, because she was good at it. I mean, good at it was, I think, an overstatement.
Oh, I rubbish at it. So it stands for lived experiences of eating disorders in neurodivergent and gender diverse people. Basically, it's a 3-year project. So it's funded by Health and Care Research Wales, which basically means that I work time on this research project, which is lovely. And what we're really hoping to do is to try and improve understanding, awareness, as well as support for eating disorders in people who are gender diverse, neurodivergent, and people who are both gender diverse and neurodivergent. So I suppose a lot of research that's been done has been brilliant in terms of helping us understand more about eating disorders in these individual groups, but really what we're lacking is an understanding of gender diversity and neurodivergence intersect, and how that impacts on how the eating disorder is experienced, because it may present differently, and then how best to support. So the 3-year project we've just started, but I keep saying we've just started. It started in October last year. It started in October last year. It is very much a team effort, but what I've really loved is being able to work with an advisory board. So it's something that I've never done before. My PhD research was very different to this, so it was more focused on sort of neural correlates. So yeah, sort of taking a step away from that, and I really want to sort of involve people with lived experiences in the project, because at the end of the day, you know, I'm trans and I've had an eating disorder, but I'm just one trans person. Everyone's experiences are so different. So really we need to hear from as many people as possible, so that we can ensure that, you know, the research is exploring what we need it to explore in terms of, you know, it being inclusive of people's diverse experiences, but then also that, you know, the data that we actually get in, how are we going to use that to make a real difference? So yeah, I'm really excited to work with our advisory board as well.
Yeah, no, I think that's awesome, and it's great to hear, you know, people with lived experience being included, because I think you're so right, you know, when the research themselves has lived experience, that's fantastic. That's not even always the case, but actually then bringing people on board that have lived experience is so good in order to get those diverse experiences, learn what's gone right, what's gone wrong, what's been helpful, and different things to bring that to service. What proportion of people that are gender diverse are neurodivergent? I assume it's probably quite a big estimate, because I know that a lot of people may be not diagnosed and things like that, but is there a rough estimate?
The latest figure is around, so gender diverse people are 2 to 6 times more common autism and ADHD than cisgender people. I think it's just being aware that there are many sort of caveats around that.
Yeah. Definitely. I think it's interesting, because I'm sure I've spoke about this on the podcast before with someone, and it kind of leans back to what I just said before in terms of when you have an eating disorder, you have to do a lot of self-reflection, and I think you learn a lot about yourselves. And I do think maybe it's almost similar with, in terms of whether it's your exploring your gender or your sexuality, like you have to take that time to process things and think about things. And then, you know, it may be more likely that you're going to have an awareness of potential ADHD or autism. And then also the other way around, if you're thinking about neurodivergence, you kind of then start to explore sexuality and gender and things like that as well. Yeah. So in terms of the research, something I'm interested in, I always like to debunk stigmas on the podcast. And I wondered what you think, or are there any kind of misconceptions around gender diverse individuals and also and all those that are neurodiverse in terms of the link to eating disorders?
Yeah, I think, I suppose one of the common ones is something that came up before, which was that I suppose all trans people sort of, you know, are going to get an eating disorder, or that for trans people who have an eating disorder, it's always linked to their trans identity. I suppose something that we know from the research is that gender dysphoria, which is the distress that's linked to incongruence between your gender and sex assigned at birth, that can be a factor that increases your risk for developing an eating disorder. Because for some people, it can sort of function as a way of actually changing their body shape to align with their gender. I suppose from my own personal experience, something that I look back on now is the fact that I was really, I suppose, in terms of the body that I wanted, it was a more masculine body with less curves. And I didn't really know that it was sort of linked to it being a masculine body at the time. Yeah, it's stuff like that which you think about afterwards. You think, actually, that does feed into the experience of the eating disorder. But yeah, for some people, it can be a sort of driving force behind the eating disorder. For other gender diverse people, they may not experience gender dysphoria. So actually, you know, it could be something completely unrelated to their gender. You know, traumatic events that may happen in their life, which can then obviously for some people put you on the path to being more vulnerable. It could be that, you know, having that sense of self is something that you're really struggling with, and it's not until later on in life that you actually start unpicking your gender identity and sort of come to that realization. So I definitely think that, yeah, it's not the case that for all trans people, the eating disorder is sort of driven by gender dysphoria. And I think that's probably a misconception that comes up quite a lot.
I've just thought of something, and you may not have the answer to this, and it's totally fine. In terms of thinking about recovery from an eating disorder, I'm just going to say what's like the stages that's going on in my head. So yeah. Somebody presents with an eating disorder, but they also recognize that they are trans, but they haven't yet transitioned. And we can't say 100% that being trans has been the trigger for the eating disorder. Mm-hmm. However, somebody obviously wants to embark on the journey of recovery, but then they also want to transition. Would the recovery have to come first before someone then transitioned, or would they be needing to transition to then see if that's the thing that's impacting the eating disorder? I mean, I guess it will depend on the person, but do you think there's any, like, you have to do one before the other in order to kind of know?
I think that's a really interesting question, and I completely get what you mean. So I think it's really tricky because, as you say, I think it's going to be quite individual. But for some people, what you hear is that because the eating disorder is serving a function for them, so if they have gender dysphoria, say they're assigned female at birth, and they're experiencing periods, which is incredibly distressing. So they end up finding out that when they restrict their food intake, that stops their periods. So for them, at that point in time, the eating disorder is serving a function, which is to alleviate the feelings of gender dysphoria that they have. So then actually thinking about eating disorder recovery when they have no other support from gender services is really, really frightening, because you know that when you start eating again, the period will restart. And then, you know, how are you going to cope with that intense distress then? So I think it's sort of it's trying to understand, you know, I suppose, one, what is driving the eating disorder for that individual, and then what other support needs to be in place for them to actually sort of start that eating disorder recovery with other things in place, so that they feel like they don't have to go back into those behaviours that they were doing before in order to sort of alleviate the gender dysphoria. So I think it is, I suppose, it's really tightly linked for some people. And something I think is also important to just mention is that for a lot of gender diverse people, I've heard that they're actually trying to access gender affirming care can be really difficult. And it can be really difficult because they may be higher weights, and actually in order to get approved for having certain surgeries, you know, there may be a BMI cutoff, and they're actually told, you know, in order for the surgery to go ahead, this is the BMI that you need to be at. So for, you know, for people who may have struggled with disordered eating and thoughts and feelings around their body shape before, you know, it is really quite difficult to try and sort of get your head around having to sort of, yeah, meet that criteria in order to actually start living your life in a lot of circumstances. You know, it's sort of a lot of, I think this is probably one of the most distressing things is that feeling like your life is constantly sort of, yeah, you're constantly waiting for other people to say, yes, you can do this. So you sort of jump through all the hoops that you need to jump through. You know, I was really lucky that at the time that I transitioned, the waiting lists for gender affirming care are not what they're like now. But for people who are on waiting lists now, you know, how long can you wait? You know, you're waiting years and years before you can actually, yeah, start living your life, really. So yeah, it's not surprising then that can lead to a lot of distress, and that the way of coping with some of that distress, you know, and gaining some sense of control is sort of the eating disorder symptom.
Yeah.
So
I'm really grateful for you kind of mentioning the BMI thing, because I think that you know, we can often almost go down the path thinking about restrictive behaviours and people, you know, having anorexic tendencies, but actually, you know, thinking about individuals that are in large bodies, you know, how do you process that in terms of, like, you know, okay, you want to have this gender affirming care, but you can't have it because you're overweight, but you already struggle with disordered eating, but we're now telling you, in order to kind of move into a body that you feel is authentic and that, you know, is the body that you want to be in, you've now got to lose weight, which you've already got this really complicated relationship. And I mean, you may not know, but I guess my thought there would be, is there any support for those people when they're told that they need to lose weight? Or are they kind of just told, no, in order to get this surgery, you need to go lose weight? Because I feel like that is an incredibly vulnerable position for somebody to be in, surely would only complicate things worse. I mean, you know, you hear about people going to their GP and asking for eating disorder treatment and then being told you don't weigh Mm. Like your weight isn't low enough. So it's, you know, it's a reflection of that again, isn't it? And I just think that's so dangerous.
I totally. I suppose I would hope that there is some support, but I don't know whether there is. I suppose when you're thinking about, you know, the health service and who may be involved in that decision, you know, surgeons who may not necessarily see trans people all the time, may not be aware of some of the complexities of, yeah, hearing that. I suppose for anyone, hearing that about your weight is really difficult. But, you know, when that is tied to such an important part of people's lives, you know, for people who do want to go down the physical transition route, then, you know, it's that gatekeeping, which I think is just so frustrating. For every trans person that I've met, and I suppose this is probably the case for everyone, is that you just want to live your life the same way that everyone else lives theirs. And, you know, who would want to have to go through all these, you know, jump through all these hoops and go through all these barriers to get to a point where you are comfortable in yourself. I think it's just, you know, raising awareness and some of that.
Yeah. And I guess with that in mind, thinking about your research and the outcomes, what are your hopes in terms of the things you want to achieve from that? And I guess specifically thinking about within healthcare and how people are supported.
Yeah, so I suppose if we're thinking about eating disorders specifically, it's really about trying to understand how eating disorders are experienced by gender diverse, neurodivergent people. It's just understanding why they develop. So for each person who experiences an eating disorder, there's going to be different factors that lead to why they've developed an eating disorder, and understanding that is key to really understanding what treatment is needed and what interventions are needed. So really about trying to improve that understanding around the mechanisms leading to eating disorders in these groups, whether some of them are shared mechanisms. You know, it could be that some gender diverse and neurodivergent people experience sort of similar factors which increase their risk. So one example would be like discrimination and stigma that can come with having that minority identity. But also unique factors which need to be taken into account when supporting people who are neurodivergent and or gender diverse. And I suppose another big thing really is listening to people with lived experience and hearing what they would like services to look like, what they think clinicians may need a bit more training around, but also what the clinicians themselves would like in terms of support to increase their confidence. Because I think, you know, a lot of the time the conversations I've had with clinicians has been that, you know, they acknowledge that it's a really big problem that we have in terms of finding treatments that are effective for everyone. And they want to do as much as they can to support everyone. Really, it's having the confidence to be able to even just have a discussion about gender identity or neurodivergence. And, you know, even things like sharing your pronouns is something that I think, you know, I've become a lot more familiar with it based on my research. But for other people, it is quite, you know, an unusual thing to do. So just trying to increase confidence in those sorts of areas. And really the project, the sort of last stage of the project is about co-designing resources. So co-designing resources with people with lived experience, as well as clinicians, to really help guide best practice so that you know, clinicians can be supported in terms of increasing their confidence, but also, you know, for people with lived experience, helping to increase their trust in services so that they do feel able to approach and access services. Because for a lot of people, if you've had negative experiences in you know, with healthcare professionals before, trust me, I've had quite a few, but I've also had really great experiences with people who, you know, have been really open to learning more. I think it's just, yeah, trying to support that process and, you know, open up conversations around people's identity, really, and how it links to eating disorders.
Yeah, absolutely. I think so much of it is, as you say, having the clinicians or whoever's providing the treatment, having that confidence. I know so many times when I've spoken to people, it's like, it's not that I don't want to help somebody, it's just I don't want to say the wrong thing. And people are so worried about saying the wrong thing that they don't then say anything. And actually, as the person on the, you know, receiving end, that feels so much worse for somebody to just kind of go blank and not say anything. Because then it's like, well, there is something wrong with me. I am weird because you don't know how to communicate with me. So I think, you know, that's so important. And as I've said before, the role of lived experience, I think it helps so much. And I think in an ideal world, you know, all services would have people that can advocate as, you know, lived experience or peer support representatives, so that, you know, there's always somebody there. Kind of, I feel like when you've got that peer support, it's almost having someone in your corner who gets it because they've been there themselves. But thank you so much. It's been so lovely to chat to you. I just wanted to ask, for in terms of your research, if somebody's listening and thinking, you know, I really would like to either contact you or get involved, is there anything they can do to help out?
So we're currently running an online survey where we're exploring some of the overlaps between gender diversity and neurodivergence in eating disorders. So if you are interested in finding out more about that, we do have an email address. So it's leading_study@cardiff.ac.uk. And we also have a Linktree account, which is something that I didn't personally set up. But I can give you the link to it.
I'll pop that in the show notes along with the email address and any other details in terms of getting in contact for with the study. But honestly, thank you so much for sharing your personal experience and information about the study. It's been really lovely to chat to you.
Thanks, Han. It's been lovely. And I, you know, if there is any chance that we could come back on once we have some findings to share, then that would be great.
Absolutely. I would love to have you back. Okay. Fantastic.
Oh, thank you.
If you enjoyed listening today, you won't want to miss next week's episode, so be sure to subscribe. Eating disorders are crippling illnesses, but with the right support, they can be recovered from. We really hope you enjoyed this episode, but if you require more support right now, please look into charities such as First Steps and Beat for support, or talk to someone you trust.